Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
John Canzano. Raw. Sourced. Fresh. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, built by high-caliber millwrights, this is The Bald-Faced Truth.
Racket came out yesterday. I was watching with great curiosity to see where Oregon would end up. 12 seed against 5-seed Wisconsin in San Jose. I also then started looking at the top seeds in the tournament. I got some questions about that. And the guy who is our resident expert, he's the national expert on bracketology. He is the best in the country. That's why we bring him on. Jerry Palm, CBS Sports, is joining us now. Jerry Palm, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
The bracket comes out. What's the first thing Jerry Palm's looking for?
Which teams I missed.
not all you got right. You're looking for, damn, where did I, and why, right?
It's usually a shorter list, the ones I missed. It's usually a shorter list.
What'd you miss on?
Belmont. I had TCU in instead. And, you know, there was something of the case for Belmont. The teams that I had outside the bracket all had some compelling reason to leave them out. Something that's usually a deal breaker for the committee. In Belmont's case, it was poor strength of schedule overall. And two bad losses. But, you know, they liked their ability to win away from home. They liked the fact they won at Murray State, which is a team that is in field, albeit as a conference champion. And they just thought that that was a good team. And it's a subjective process. So I can't really argue with that. And I don't really have – I'm not complaining about it either, because I kind of like seeing Belmont get a shot. And I think they could win a game or two. So – and then TCU, you know, TCU had a number of high quality games, quadrant one games, and won, I think, two. It's what Iowa State might have been a third one in there over Texas, maybe, and, you know, which wasn't a tournament team. So that's, you know, when you get so many chances and you don't put up a very good record against those teams, you're probably not going to make it.
Let me ask you, because if you're a team or you're a university that's outside of the tournament, you didn't make it, and you're consulting with Jerry Palm, and you go, hey, Jerry, what did you see the selection committee do here that we can learn about as we schedule for future years? Is there some trend you see? Obviously, you want to win all your games, but as far as scheduling is concerned, what is in the control of those universities right now, and what would you advise them to do?
I mean, the only team that got left out for scheduling reasons with North Carolina State, who played the single worst schedule, conference schedule, in all of Division I, 353 out of 353.
Wow.
And that's a schedule that, by the way, had Auburn and Wisconsin on it. So, you know, it's not like every team they played was dreadful, but they went out and scheduled the worst teams money could buy. And if you do that, you better be really good when you get into your conference, because you're basically taking the first 2 months off. And then, you know, then they were mediocre in conference as well and didn't really beat anybody. Their best conference win was Syracuse at home. They beat Auburn at home. That's pretty much all they did. Clemson a couple of times. You know, that's not going to overcome that strength of schedule. And we see it almost every year. A team, usually from a major conference, gets left out because their non-conference strength of schedule is really bad and they didn't do anything to make up for it. And, you know, NC State learned that lesson this year. And their AD put out a statement whining about it, but, you know, too bad.
Is the trick not just to schedule somewhere in the middle? Like, you want enough games where you can say, look, we played some teams? Or because if you go the other way, you run the risk of, you know, having, you know, going 11 and 20.
Yeah. Right. I mean, you should. My advice has always been you should schedule the best teams you can beat. I would suggest that NC State failed that test.
Jerry Palm, CBS Sports bracketology expert, is with us. All right, the Duke is the number one overall seed. I see that in their bracket, they get Michigan State, that I kind of view as, you know, Michigan State might have been a one seed in a different, you know, a different committee. Did Duke get a raw deal there? What's happening with Michigan State being in their bracket?
Interesting you say Duke gets a raw deal, because Michigan State's doing a lot of whining about it, or at least their fans are. I mean, I don't know. I think Izzo said something too. Really, Michigan State should be above that level of whining. Go play your game. No, really, does anybody care if Michigan State's whining?
Yeah.
No. I mean, I don't.
But I saw it as
like Michigan State, but I don't want to hear whine.
But I saw it as Duke is going to get, if Duke gets to a Elite Eight game against Michigan State, they're going to have one of the tougher matchups.
Are you sure? Well, okay. Yes. If they both get there.
Yeah.
You know, Michigan State lost to Indiana twice in Illinois. That's why they're not a one, because those are the three worst losses any of the top eight teams have. Okay, Michigan lost to Penn State, so that would be of a similar quality. You know, but, I mean, that's nobody else has losses like that. That's why they're a two. You know, if you don't want to play Duke in your region, win those games. You're a one then, and you can stop whining about having to play Duke. Really, I have no sympathy for that. The bracket is done geographically. Everybody knows it. The schools want it that way. That's why it's done that way. Michigan got sent to Washington, D.C., which is closer for them significantly than Anaheim, California. Their fans have a better chance to go. That's why they're sent there. You know, go play your games.
Gonzaga is a one seed. I found it interesting that they could potentially end up playing Syracuse in that zone in that second round game. How did you view Gonzaga's path to the Final Four?
Interesting. Isn't Florida State in that region too?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean that, and Florida State. I mean, it's a similar team to Syracuse. But, they're just long. Florida State is long and athletic and deep. I mean, they're not a lot of fun to play. I don't really think Gonzaga would have a lot of trouble with Syracuse. They just don't think they're good enough.
Yeah.
And I mean, is Tyus Battle going to play? If Tyus Battle doesn't play, they may not even play Syracuse. I'm not as worried about Syracuse, but yeah, Florida State could be a problem. Just because they play like 11 guys, and they're all like 6'6" with arm wingspans of 7'3". It's I'm exaggerating a little, but that, I mean, that's what they are. Now they're challenged a bit offensively at times, but Florida State's a pretty good team, and you know, then you might see Michigan or Texas Tech, neither of which is fun to play against for different reasons. And Michigan, as you know, is a team that typically plays above its seed in the tournament. And it's funny because, you know, it's like, well, Michigan got a better draw. I mean, that's Michigan State's complaint, is that Michigan got a better draw. It's like, well, you're in Gonzaga's region. That's not exactly chopped liver. They beat Duke. They're the only team to beat Duke at full strength this year. You know, so if you really want to play that team, that's your choice, go for it. Go out west and play Gonzaga. That's not a lot of fun.
Jerry Palm, CBS Sports, with us. I want to focus on the 5-12 matchups in each region, because we do see some upsets there traditionally. Start in the Midwest. You got 5 Auburn. They are in this game. Is that New Mexico State, I believe, that they play?
Yeah
New Mexico State, that 5-12 game. Is that an upset there, or do you think Auburn handles them?
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, well, I mean, they certainly could. Auburn's more talented. But New Mexico State's a pretty good team. They just quietly won, 30 games this year, pretty close to it. Took Kansas, when Kansas was still Kansas, took them to a 3-point game in Lawrence. So they're not going to be afraid of Auburn. I think certainly New Mexico State, if they have a good game, is capable of winning.
In the South region, 5 Wisconsin, 12 Oregon. What do you think?
That's the only game where I picked 5. I like Oregon. I think Dana Altman did a tremendous job getting this team, you know, to the point where they could win the Pac-12 tournament at the end of the year. They really came on strong. And I'm picking Wisconsin with not very much confidence, because I like the way Oregon finished the year. I just think that they're hard to prepare for. They're hard to play against, because Wisconsin likes to grind you. They've got a big man that is almost impossible to guard. He's got so many post moves, Ethan Happ. I mean, really, the best way to guard him is to follow him to the free throw line where he shoots, you know, like 46% instead of, you know, 63% or whatever it is from the floor. But pretty soon you run out of guys if you do that. So you do have to try and defend him. I like Wisconsin's style. I just think if you don't see teams like Wisconsin, it's hard to get ready to play them.
Yeah, give us an idea, because you see the Big Ten up close where you live geographically, and you know you follow it closer than the rest of us. We all know the Pac-12 had a down year, and in maybe any other year, Oregon coming from a 6 seed would not have been able to win 4 games in 4 days and win the conference tournament. I just think it was set up nicely for them to blossom. What did Wisconsin look like throughout the year to you?
They just look like Wisconsin. They've got guys that can shoot from the perimeter. They've got a great post. They play very good defense. They will crash the glass. They will test your patience. They're perfectly happy using 28 seconds to find a shot. And they will defend you to the point where you might take 28 seconds to find a shot. And if you're an impatient team, Wisconsin will get you to play a way that you don't like. They'll get you to rush stuff. It's really not a lot of fun to play. You have to be disciplined, and you have to be tough, and you usually have to be physical, although this is not as physical as other Wisconsin teams. But to play these guys, that's what you need to be.
In the East region, the 5-12 is number 5 Mississippi State against number 12 Liberty. You like Liberty?
I do. Yeah, I just thought that was a – that was a pretty good team this year that didn't quite get the big win, you know, that would really get everybody's attention. But I think they're capable of it. Of the 12 that I'm picking, I'm probably least confident about Liberty, because I think Mississippi State's a pretty good team. It had a good year and well-coached by Ben Howland, who's, you know, been to 3 Final Fours. So he knows a little bit about what to do in the NCAA tournament. That one's a little bit more of a flyer, but I do like Liberty.
And finally, the other 5-12, you've got Marquette against Murray State. Marquette is the 5 seed. You like the underdog there, too.
Yeah, that Murray State, of course, is unusual in that you're talking about a smaller school, 12-seed type of team that has an NBA lottery pick on it, John Morant. And Marcus Howard, of course, the star guard for Marquette. And both, you know, teams are led by, carried by those two players. And Marquette has really fallen on hard times at the end of this season. Lost their last 4 regular season games, and I think it ended up being a total of 5 out of 6. They were getting kind of chippy there in the Big East tournament, that game with Seton Hall. That was a mess. But I think the teams that tend to be trending down stay down. It's hard to get it turned back around and get turned on. You know, get things going again when you're slumping like this, especially in the pressure of an NCAA tournament environment.
Give us, you know, of the 1 seeds, Duke, Virginia, UNC, and Gonzaga, who do you think is the first out?
Well, in my bracket, I have Virginia and Carolina going out at the same time in the Elite Eight. I picked Tennessee and Kentucky. And I have Duke and Gonzaga also in the Final Four. So I guess Virginia and Carolina. And I don't think either one of them got easy draws. It would be fun, though, if we get to see, and fun, you know, in an eye-bleeding sort of way, if we get to see Virginia and Wisconsin play each other. Because then you've got, you know, Tony Bennett, you know, with his style of play that he learned from his dad, who brought it into Division I at Wisconsin. At least 20 years ago now.
Yeah.
And so Wisconsin's still doing what Dick Bennett brought to Wisconsin, and now Tony Bennett doing it in Virginia. That might be the first team to 40 win.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, because I feel like it's too coincidental that Virginia and Wisconsin could potentially meet, it would be like a sweet 16.
Yeah.
Then you've got Minnesota and Louisville playing. You got an obvious storyline, Patino storyline there. You got Howland bringing his team back to the West. You know, do you think they intentionally do that?
I only registered one of those when I saw the bracket. Yeah, no, they don't. Certainly not far down the line stuff like Wisconsin and Virginia. They certainly aren't thinking about what might happen 2 games off. I doubt that anybody in the room would not know about the Patino angle, but the bracket's being done by geography.
Yeah.
So it just worked out that way. What's weird about that is that Minnesota and Michigan State could play each other in the second round, and that's a conference game. That's only allowable because they played each other once, but there's 8 Big Ten teams in the bracket, so it's hard to sort things out. There's 2 Big Ten teams on the 10 line, and it's and 2 Big Ten teams that are twos, and another that's a three. So there's only so many different ways you could arrange all of these Big Ten teams, and so we end up with a situation where Minnesota could play Michigan State in the second round.
All right, give us our Jerry Palm 5-star can't miss upset in the opening round, a Thursday Friday game.
Well, I mean, we just talked about it. I think it's Murray State over Marquette. I'm just not sold on Marquette being in this tournament very long at all, and I think they got a tough draw because they've got a guy. The good guard on the other team is actually better than theirs. There aren't many guys better than Marcus Howard, but John Morant is one of them.
Jerry Palm, you're the best. What region will you be at? Will you go?
I'm actually going to Columbus, so I will see Washington, Utah State, which I think is one of the more intriguing 8-9 games.
I like Utah State.
I do too.
Washington just has not looked well, and if Utah State's got some size.
Yeah. It's actually the same thing we've talked about with Marquette. Washington's going the wrong way and can't seem to get it turned back on, and it's hard to do that once the tournament starts. And you know Utah State's going to, you know, just shot at a Power 5 team, man. They'll be geeked up.
All right, Jerry Palm, you're the best. I appreciate you making time.
All right, thanks.
There he is, bracketology expert. Hey, we don't mess around. We don't monkey around with, like, let's get the third best guy on this show. Jerry Palm is the best in the country when it comes to the bracket. The bracket comes out, we all go, ooh, look what they did. And Jerry Palm is looking for like the one school he missed. Damn, I didn't have Belmont in my bracket. The rest of us are like, you know, oh, that's a cool matchup. You know, it's just, he comes at it from just a different thing. I'm looking at Oregon. I was looking for Oregon, and I was looking for Washington, and I was looking for Arizona State. I didn't really care about anything else in the bracket, and as it came out, Jerry Palm was looking for, I got that one right, got that one right, got that one right. He knows. He used to run a website called College RPI. Then CBS Sports said, that dude knows what he's talking about, let's hire him. And by the way, those universities, those ADs that I mentioned, it was one of my first questions for Jerry Palm. They consult with Palm, and they say to him, hey, how should we schedule? And Palm serves as a consultant for these college programs. So we don't just bring some Yahoo Purdue fan from the Midwest onto the show. We go and I go, this morning, I pull out the Rolodex and I go, I wonder what Jerry Palm's doing today. And Jerry Palm, I have to almost like back into asking him on the show. I'm like, I know you're busy, but could our listeners love hearing from you? Because you help them win with their brackets every year. And he just gave you Murray State over Marquette. And while the rest of those Yahoos in your office pool just go, oh, 5-seed Marquette over Murray State, you know what to do. Leave it right here. You got the bald-faced truth statewide. U.S. Senator Ron Wyden will be on the show a little bit later. He's fired up about this Enos Kanter thing, and justifiably so. And I ask him what the end game is. Like, what is this? What is this about? What's the end game? What's the resolution that would work? We'll talk to Ron Wyden later in the program. Peyton Pritchard, Oregon Ducks point guard, will be with us tomorrow, 12:30. Put it in your calendars. Tomorrow, 12:30, Peyton Pritchard will be on the show. He's dunked. He's now worthy of coming on the show. So that's what we do. If you haven't dunked in a college game on TV, then you can't come on. No, we've had Peyton Pritchard on many times. Be happy to have him back on tomorrow as we talk about their run-up. He's very excited about this run-up to the NCAA tournament. I want to talk about Haloti Ngata, though, for a second. You guys see what Haloti Ngata did? Former Oregon Duck? He retired.
I did.
Did you see how he retired?
I did.
He climbed. This is like the most Alabama Adriana thing ever. Okay? Haloti Ngata wanted to announce his retirement, so he climbed to the top of Mount Kilimanjaro and then put it on Instagram, and they show like the Kilimanjaro sign, the elevation, he's smiling and it's panning down, and then he's holding a sign that says he's retiring at the top. from his NFL career after 13 seasons. That's like millennial palooza.
I think that was cool. It was a cool display of like what you can do still as you're retiring from your sport.
Yeah. Is that like, that's something you'd want to do? Like, you know?
Well, yeah. If you had like a good videography team, you could make that really cool.
That's I'm hanging cool. it up. After 13 years as the associate producer on the show, I'm going out on top on Kilimanjaro. No, you like that. I just thought it was a neat thing. He wants to be a kindergarten teacher. Do you know that?
Oh,
yeah. Mr. Nada, can I use the bathroom, please? No. Okay.
The TV doesn't do him justice on the size of that man. Yeah. He is one of the biggest gentlemen I have ever seen and been, you know, been next to in my life.
Yeah. He, for people who don't know, Haloti Ngata, I'm going to say he weighed about 330. Here's my experience with Haloti Ngata. Obviously, he played at Oregon, and many people remember watching him at University of Oregon. Oregon brought me down when he was on campus to speak to their communications classes. So I went and talked to like visual communications, journalism students, and you know, I went from classroom to classroom, and it was pretty interesting just to see all the kids who were there and the classes they were teaching them. I was fascinated by that because it was stuff that I wasn't even taught in school because, you know, media had transformed into a lot of digital media, you know, during that time. It was big transformative time. And I remember two things. Jeff Schwartz was a student at Oregon at that time. He was in a class and here he is, a guy who's headed to the NFL. And Schwartz came up to me after the class and asked if I would help read something that he had written. And, you know, I stayed in touch with him after evaluating his paper. And then the second thing was I went to talk to this communications class and was in an auditorium. And it was a huge class. And Haloti Ngata sat in the front row. And he was massive, sitting in the front row. He looked like a student, you know, in that little desk. You know what I mean? Like that. There was this little kind of armrest kind of platform. Forum thing in front of him, and Haloti Ngata sitting in that little desk. I just so distracting as I, you know, walk in to talk. I look at him and I'm like, "There's Haloti Ngata jammed into this little movie theater style seat." Pretty cool to see him like in the front row.
How would you do that? Climb the mountain and then retire that way?
From what, this radio show?
What, when you retire?
I'll climb to the top of the PacWest Center and hold up a banner. I'm over that, here on the building.
Is that appealing to you, I guess, is what I'm asking.
It feels like a lot of work. I respect it, but it feels like that there's
but
a lot of
it's an accomplishment. You're big on accomplishments.
I am.
Isn't it? It's accomplishment.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's something you hang your hat on. Like, you know, I what do you call that? Summited?
Yes.
Kilimanjaro? Is that the terminology?
I think it is.
You're the rock climber. What do you call that?
Yeah, that's right.
I summited it. See, I knew that. But I have had one... I guess I had a couple mountain climbing experiences, not like the serious climbing the face of Half Dome climbing, but I grew up not far from Yosemite, okay? And maybe I took it for granted that there was like a Yosemite everywhere, but we used to go on hikes as a family when I was a kid. We'd climb like these smaller mountain ranges and get to the top of them, and you know, we didn't take a selfie. There's no selfie.
There's no, yeah.
We didn't go on Instagram, Snapchat it or something. We just climbed it, and we... kept it in our heart that we climbed to the top of that mountain. But one of the other things I did one time when I was covering, for some reason, it must have been a Pac-12 game, and I was in the Phoenix area. I went to Camelback, and what struck me was I got out there early in the morning because it was a hot day, must have been spring or early fall, and it was a hot day, got out there early, and was going up the trails to get to the top of Camelback, and what struck me was how healthy all those people were who were also out there, you know, hiking up this thing. And I thought, yeah, there is a correlation between going up these mountains and physical fitness. And people's dogs were climbing with them, and it was pretty cool. But Kilimanjaro is another animal. Like, you need a team to do that.
Yes.
So, have you done that kind of climbing?
No, nothing like that. I've had friends that have done it.
How about you?
No, I stick to the bouldering, like, short, not very high up, so you don't have to go on rope. Mountaineering, though, is something else.
Yeah.
You like bouldering.
Yeah.
So what is bouldering for people? Like, it's just...
Bouldering is you go... I'm not sure exactly what the height is, but you only climb short distances so that you can have a crash pad. You don't have to be on rope.
Yeah.
You're basically just free climbing.
Yeah. But you have to have tremendous strength to do that. Like,
yeah.
Forearm, upper body, lower body strength, balance.
Hand. Yeah.
Your hands.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Seen a climber, a professional climber's hands before?
No.
They're pretty crazy. That you can see muscles on their that generate through the top of their
really?
Hand and their fingers. It's
they just
pretty
develop
crazy.
That.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Just ripped hands. Yeah. All right, coming up, Punch It Audio is next. It's the best sound from all.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.